people in the house. What up? We're not just ready, but the music just dropped, so it makes me feel like I'm ready. But I wanted to say thank you for coming out. It's Sunday. What's up, y'all? How you doing?
Hey.
That was weak. I need more energy than that. It is Sunday. What up, Pax? What y'all doing? That's what I'm talking about. Because we need that energy. It's Sunday. Sunday. Trucks and all that other good stuff. So thank you, everybody, for coming and hanging out this afternoon. This is the Indie Megabooth Building Bridges and Breaking Barriers panel. I'm your moderator, Khalif Adams of the Spawn on Me podcast. Shout out to all of you for making it through the week. And shout out to all of our guests who are going to be rocking with us on the panel this afternoon. I'm just going to go down the list and say what's up to everybody and get everyone in the groove because we are here about to talk about some video games and cool stuff. So to my left is Huyan Kiano from the Beautiful Glitch crew. He's the creative director over there. Shout out to Julian.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming.
Kelly Wallach is the founder of the Indie Megaboo. Shout out to Kelly. What's up, Kelly? Chandana Akanyake is from Outer Loop. He is the co-founder of that outfit. Shout out to Ika. Last but not least, over on the far end is Abby Heppy, who is the communications manager for Media Molecule. Shout out to you, Abby. What's good? So this panel is going to be about kind of bridging those gaps, talking about the conversation about how do you do that in the space, especially on the indie side and even on the AAA side. First of all, I want to go down the line, because it is Sunday and we know just how tired everyone is, I have to ask the question of how the hell are you doing? How are you feeling right now? Is everything good?
Yeah, a bit exhausted, but I guess everyone here, but it's a good exhaustion, so it's fine.
Not too bad. Kelly, how you holding up?
I've been doing pretty good. I'm doing the drinking lots of water and going to bed on time thing.
What is that about?
Yeah, I think I told you the story before, but one of the first times I met Robert Koo, he was like, I don't ever drink at shows, and I was like, I don't get that. And I've tried it, and it's amazing.
Isn't it great? It's like you feel all hydrated. Your skin feels all good. It's like you walk outside, don't feel dry.
Yeah.
Ika, how you holding up?
I'm doing the opposite of Kelly. No sleep and drinking a lot. But the fans keep me going. It's been really fun just being here, and I'll sleep next week.
Next week. Abby, how you holding up?
I'm like the combination of those, where it's like, I've had a few drinks, but I've gone to bed at a really reasonable hour, only this is my first PAX with jet lag.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at 3 a.m, I'm like, hey, how's PAX? And then at 3 p.m, I'm like, we're at that stage.
Yeah. It's a fantastic show. If you're covering the show or if you're just a person kind of running around trying to find games to play, it is fantastic. But it is definitely one of those things you need rest after you do that. So we're going to go down the line. I want to talk a little bit about and kind of open up the discussion about, you know, a little bit of introduction so everybody can kind of let you all know, you know, what they do in the industry. I'm going to start from the far end and then work my way back this way. So Abby, if you could start us off, just give the folks in the audience a little bit of an intro of what you do at Media Molecule and the stuff that you've been doing in the industry.
Sure. So I started in print media as an editor for a magazine called Tips and Tricks, which no longer exists. And then I found my way to television, where I was a producer for a show called X-Play on G4. And then from there to the developer world, where I was at Respawn Entertainment on Titanfall for 5.5 years. And now I'm at Media Molecule. And I started off as actually a remote employee, commuting to Guildford, England once a month from Los Angeles. And now I'm full-time in the UK. My job is managing like basically marketing, community, PR, anything outward facing for our company. So I help a lot of people like with talks. I work on a lot of our trailers. I work with licensing. I work with marketing and PR to make sure that like we're always presenting Media Molecule to the world.
Awesome. Ika.
I've been making games for a while. I started at 19 at Bethesda, a game called Morrowind, small game. I started as an artist. I do a lot of art and design now, so I've worked in multiple companies. I started Outer Loop last August. It's a small studio here in the Seattle area. We're about 7 of us. We're doing a game called Falcon Age. It's a game where you about birds, and you learn to become a falcon hunter. So right now, these days, I run the business, do art, design, and shows and stuff. So.
Kelly?
Yeah, so I started working on the Mega Booth actually next month. It'll be 7 years since we first started. Yeah. Which is totally incredible. And so my life before that, I was a scientist. I worked as a chemist, and I wasn't involved in video games at all. And so I've actually been working in video games now longer than I think I had a career in the sciences, which is, not something I ever thought was going to happen. Yeah, and so we started off at PAX. And for those of you who have stopped by, the fourth floor, the Indie Mega Booth area is kind of like where all the indie games hang out. And we have this really amazing community that we built over that time. I think it was like almost 800 companies we've worked with over the course of the 7 years. And like, yeah, everyone's amazing, and the PAX fans are amazing, and it's just, yeah, it's been a wild ride. And so I think, I don't even know how to describe what my job is at the Mega Booth, but just all of it. And we have an amazing team now, so it's like I'm kind of less on the like logistics day-to-day stuff and more like how do we grow the community and how do we connect up indie games with fans. And then I'm also the chairperson for the Independent Games Festival, which is an award ceremony for independent game developers that's held at GDC each year. And that's been going on for about 20 years, and I've been running it. I think this will be my fourth year that I'm doing that. So basically anything that kind of has to do with like indie games and the community and kind of advocating for that is pretty much, like, I guess, what my role would be.
I feel like after that, you just have to, like, drop a mic or just scream, boss.
Panel over.
Word. Julian?
I just has been working in media games for 2 years, so now I feel a bit inadequate, but I don't come from the game industry. I come from advertising and communications. I started working in video games because, I don't know, I like video games. And so we recently, like 3-4 months ago, released our first game, which is called Monster Prom. It's like a multiplayer narrative adventure, a bit of party game, a bit of a dating sim, and it's going really good because apparently people like to romance monsters, and so good for us.
Awesome. So you're the perfect person to ask this first question because
why?
as someone who is newer to the industry and to the space, you know, one of the things that we all try to figure out and kind of convey to folks who may not be in game development is just what that process looks like for folks, both on the inside and kind of on the outside. So, you know, what are some of the challenges that you've kind of faced so far with you being in the industry for the first couple of years? And kind of talk about, you know, how you've kind of viewed some of those things and how you kind of reached and beat some of those obstacles.
Yeah, I worked in the video game industry for like 8 or 10 months before starting my own project. I was like the PR guy for a really small indie studio in Barcelona. By the way, I'm from Barcelona, Spain. And the game really like tanked big time. It was a failure, to be honest. And I took a lot of notes because, you know, everyone is saying all the time, and it's kind of true, that the video game scene, the indie scene, is really crowded right now. And I think the big challenge is right at the start to think on idea that makes sense for your resources and that makes sense for the current market. And then, I don't know, the big challenge is to find the right team. That I think it's a lot about getting the right idea, not because it's super creative, but also because it's viable, it's strategic, it fits the market, even if it's super niche. I made a game about romancing monsters, a multiplayer dating sim. It's not like I did Match 3, you know, which is completely fine too. it is. But it's finding your spot in the market, I think, and then finding the right team, which is really a challenge. In our case, I love how we find the team. We have a lot of collaborators, but the core team were like 5 people. We started being 4, and here's the thing with the 3, and it's really fast. The programmer, which is here, is Elias. He worked with me at another company, and I went to him with a notebook and a lot of like scribbles with like, don't get a new job, just come with me to make this game, it will work. I have to be clear, I wasn't in the game industry before, so he believed in the idea, and he just come, and he has working since then, and it's amazing. And also the artist, I met him doing a really nice passion project. I hold a part of the game, which is the Indie Design. It's a celebration of indie games, like a collaborative art book of different indie games portrayed by different artists. I did that as a passion project, but I found my artist, who is amazing thanks to that. And the writer is just, I was thinking on the game, like the game direction and everything, and I thought, like, 3 years ago, I read this book. I was laughing out loud at public spaces, feeling really embarrassed, and it's just what I want for my game. And I just went to the bookshelf of my house. I checked the book. I checked the author. I contacted him, and I was like, I have this idea. It's about romancing monsters. Do you want to join? Let's talk about that. And he's now the writer. And so it's going for it and trying to do the best with your resources, being realistic, because lots of indies just fail before releasing. Mm. And I think that's no enough planning and strategic thinking. But if you get the right team, I think that's one of the biggest steps you can take.
Awesome, awesome. I'm going to come to you, Kelly, with that question, but at a different angle.
Okay.
So what are the things that you hear from the folks when you're helping to curate and kind of showcase the folks in Indie Mega Booth that they are asking you about some of the challenges that they are finding and how you can help them kind of overcome some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I think discoverability is a giant issue because there's a lot of indie games. And then I think for indie games particularly, there's audiences of people that I think would really like them, and some of them can be very niche, and like, how do you actually reach those audiences and how do they discover you and find you? You know, like a game like Monster Prom or something, you know, like obviously like there's an audience of people who want to play a game like that, but like, are they hanging out on Steam? Are they on Xbox? Are they on PlayStation? Like, do they even not care about any of this stuff? Is it just like word of mouth? And so I think discoverability is a big giant concern for a lot of indie developers. And then also like kind of balancing the creative and the business and the technical side. Like, I think that there's a tendency if you're running your own company or you're running your own studio to like lose track of your work-life balance and to like, how many resources do you actually need? Like, how many people do you really need on your team? How much funding do you actually need? How long can you make, like, how long can you be working on the game? And like, what's the trade-off on that? And so I think that that's probably two of the biggest things that we kind of hear. And the ways that we try and help with that is obviously we're curating, so we're saying like, okay, we're helping with the discoverability issue. But then we don't really have a fan audience so much. Like, people at PAX really like us and they know who we are, but outside of that, like, you know, if you just went to a random person who plays video games and told them about the Mega Booth, like, they wouldn't really know who we are. So we've been really trying to change that, is to like find the audiences of people that already like the work that we do and already like those kinds of games. And so we've started up a mailing list, and so you can sign up for that actually at the booth or on the website, and then we will send out to you and say like, hey, this game is coming out this month, or like, this is a show that we're gonna be at, or here's a cool thing that's happening. Because I really believe that there's a lot of underserved audiences out there, and there's a lot of developers who are making the cool content for them, and the kind of missing piece is like, how are they talking to each other and where are they finding each other? And we also try and work with other like bigger platforms and stuff as well to kind of advocate on the behalf of curating for indie content or curating for more diverse audiences. Because if you kind of have this thing where you're just like always promoting the same kind of content over and over again, then you're just going to get the same kind of audiences over and over again.
Yeah. Awesome, awesome. Ika, I want to hit you with that question, but from another angle.
Okay.
So you're an industry vet. You've been in the game for a while. The thing that I think most people are trying to figure out who are either starting game development or kind of in their midlife crisis of game development and trying to figure out what the next steps may be. Do you feel like the struggles that you've heard from younger developers, or even, you know, from your own experiences when you were first starting out, do you feel like we're getting better with the kind of overarching narratives that we see of issues that we see coming up in the space? Do you feel like things are kind of getting better now that you've been in the industry for a while?
I mean, it's different now, but I mean, the thing I see now is just the tools and accessibility for things to get people to, you know, get started in games is much better than it was when I started, because there was no schools you can go to, or Unity or you know, Unreal or free tools like that to even get started. So in that case, it's gotten a lot better. And you know, I started before the internet, so a long time ago, and YouTube and Twitter and you know, all that stuff. So it's very different. So I do a lot of mentoring now, like at GDC and in my spare time with some other younger devs. So I think a lot of it is, there's a lot of resources. It's just really, you just have to have the drive. the best thing I tell people is just, if you want to make a game, just go make a game. Like, it's, you know, and start small, because I have lots of half-started games that I never finish, because it's really hard to finish a game. So just start super, super simple, and there's a lot of resources. And Twitter's been good, and social media's been good to reach out to people. And for help. For example, the game I'm working on now, the writer on it, she did a game called 80 Days, and I heard her on her podcast, and I was like, I want to work with her. I think that would be really good. So I just reached out to her on Twitter and had a conversation about the game I want to make, and now she's working on my project, and I think she's also doing Boyfriend Dungeon, which is like one of the things I really wanted to play. I still haven't played there. We're right next to each other at the Mega Booth, but we've been so busy, haven't got a chance to play it yet. But it's really cool to see a lot more diverse voices and people in games that aren't making the same type of games too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot more like romance games, which it's been great. Like I went to, I was in New York for an event. It was a game Devs of Color Expo, and there was like I think there was like 20 romance games, which is awesome, right? Like
I just love that all types.
All types, and I was just—it's great to see, and like it doesn't have to be the same kind of experience you see in AAA space. So I think I'm really happy to be in the space, and super excited about still making games.
Yeah, shout out to GDoc. If you're in the tri-state area, you need to go check out GDoc because it's fantastic. Yeah. Abby, I want to roll into what this all looks like from the communication side, because that's really interesting. As a person who's trying to hopefully do CM work in that real way. What is it like to kind of try to figure out how to balance out and share out, you know, the work that you're all doing at MM while also trying to be cognizant of the kind of pitfalls that we see on the internet doing what that does? What's that been like kind of massaging all that stuff together to make it dope?
Well, I mean, I feel like we're very lucky at MM. Like, we have a very kind community, and that's, like, really been, like, a pleasure to interact with. So that makes that a little bit easier. But really, I mean, we put a lot of thought into everything we do. I mean, it's not just, there's the tendency to think of it as like, oh, you know, you just tweet about something or what's going on in the studio, but like, we actually build, you know, multi-month strategy. You know, when it comes to a show like PAX,
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you just repeat everything you just said?
Yeah.
for the recording.
You just, okay, here we go. You know, I was saying that's where a lot of strategy comes in. Like, we actually spend a lot of time building out, like multi-month strategy when it comes to shows. You know, we really look for, like, what our community is, wants to see. We think about that. But I also spend a lot of time working directly with the developers at our company and making sure that every time somebody is going out, to shows, I talk to people about just the pitfalls of social media. And I also tell them about setting boundaries for social media. Like, we don't expect you as a company to be out there as a company representative all of the time. And we really love when you do that, but we love when you share what we do and the content that we put out. We don't expect you to have to take the onus of supporting the entire community. And I think, as fun as it is to do all the things that we do and to, like, stream all the time and to be on all the time and to answer questions and to really interact, because it is so important to getting the word out about your games and doing that, it's equally as important to set your own boundaries so that you don't burn out, so that you don't, you know, find yourself in a frustrated place, so that you don't make people feel like they have to be responsible for being on all the time, for interacting all the time, and for being a representative of your company all the time. And I think that that is something that it becomes increasingly easy to forget about, is there's sort of like a self-care and a company care that goes with that as well. So making sure that you do community management smartly, rather than just like, we'll be on all the time because we can, and we can always just be there for you and show you everything that we want to show you about the game. But like, actually putting a strategy behind that and being thoughtful and making sure that's communicated to every person that you work with so that they know as well. We media train people. But we also find really fun outlets. Like, that's the great thing about working with a really, like, amazing group of developers, is that, like, you get to know everybody's personalities and what they're really good at and what they want to do and what they offer that's really unique to community. And we build on that all the time. Like, on the show floor, one of our designers, he's really fast. So we've been like, cool, we're going to pull something from the community and see if you can build it in 10 minutes. And we've been doing this all day, and he's a workhorse. I mean, I'm amazed that he's, like, kept going. But we love finding those, like, unique things and giving people a chance to shine. And when we do that, it's like they don't feel that they need to do all the other things. Like, we find something that's specific to them that the community really loves and bring that out.
That's fantastic. I love stuff like that, because it is, and you see it every time that, you know, stuff comes out of MM it feels really, really thoughtful. It feels like everyone on that team is cohesive in that way, and they kind of know to push that stuff forward in good ways. I want to kind of dig into one of the main topics about the panel today is kind of bridging those cultural gaps as well. That's really important. We see that, you know, games are international, they are worldwide, they are in many, many places that, you know, we thought it was just in two places at one point, and it was just like Japan and the U.S., but it is many, many places. Julian, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, what has it been like being from Spain and making your game and having the cultural touchstones that you bring into the game as an individual kind of reflect themselves in the games that you make. That plus, we had a discussion before about, you know, you having multiple people in multiple places working with you on the game. How's it been to kind of meld those cultural references or meld those folks from different places to kind of put out a cohesive product?
I mean, I like every week devour TV shows, and those are American TV shows. So I think sometimes that our game, if you have played it, feels kind of like an American fiction, I think. Mm. And also our team is, the core team, that we have a lot of cool collaborators, but the core team, these five people, we are two from Barcelona, but three of them are from the States. So the two writers are also from the States. And I think in the end, it feels like really like American game. And working with the people like abroad, it has been at first tricky, but now really rewarding because we're like a small family, I want to think. I really like to work the way I always say it's like the Spanish way, because we're really relaxed. You know, we are like, if you know words in Spanish, you know, fiesta and siesta, I always say. And it's like that. And so when I'm managing the team, I think we're doing good work. But normally what's really important to me is not to push the people to a point where they get exhausted or like, you know, tired from the project. Just being chill, I don't know. Because that's the way like they work best in the end, because they're not getting like really like stressed because of the game. And so I think the results are really, really cool thanks to that. Also about being from working from Spain, we have this silly thing, not so silly for the release, that we have got a lot of nice coverage internationally. We like Kotaku or Destructoid or Rock Paper Shotgun, but we weren't, before release, we weren't getting covered by Spain, like by Spanish media outlets. A few maybe, but it's like nobody there took us that seriously, I think. Now we have released a game. It has been, statistically speaking, a success within the indie scene, and still it doesn't feel like they take us like that seriously. Sometimes I think it may be because we are dating sim. I don't know if that's like a handicap or something to their perception. I hope it's not. But it's, I don't know, like, we're okay with that now, you know, the game is working, so. But when we have to think, and it's not because I'm in this panel, when we have to think and when we discuss about what feels like a family, is not like there's magnificent people in the Spanish scene, that's for sure. But when I have to think about a family we have within the indie scene, it's the Megabooth, because the first time we were at an international convention was at GDC last year. We were selected by the Megabooth. We were like amazed. It was like being invited to sit at the cool kids table, you know? Like maybe from people from here, the PAX is like more a normal thing. I don't know how it is, but for us it was like, you know, you see this in like people talking about PAX and GDC, and suddenly like Monster Prom was going to be part of it. And we have been with the Megabooth like, I think, like many times since then, like a couple of PAX West, one PAX East. I think this is technically our last time to be, according to the rules. It's time for us to make room to other games, like our next game maybe. But it feels like family. And in Spain, there's, as individuals, there's people we love, other developers, but and some groups of people that are really nice. But I think that the closest to an indie family we have is here, the Megabooth family, and that's cool.
Oh, no. We can share. By the end of this, we'll all be sharing one microphone.
So, So Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm curious to know, kind of touching on the cultural aspect of it, you know, having to, getting the chance to kind of pull in so many different games from all over the world, have you felt that there's been more of an influx of stories coming from any particular places or folks kind of trying to dig into and talk about the cultural aspects of their actual games more in both gameplay and kind of narrative? Do you see that those are things that are coming up and being more prevalent in some of the stuff you're seeing coming through Megabooth?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some of that is intentional on our behalf. And so when we very first started doing the Megabooth, it was a little bit like, wow, I wonder how many indie games are out there. So I didn't really know that many. And there, I mean, and to be fair, like the industry wasn't in the same place that it is now. And then it kind of very quickly became like, oh, I think we need to curate. Like we need to have a quality check and we need to really think about what this is. And then it also started to become a community at the same time. So like what you're saying, like it feels like a family, and like the community part of the Megabooth is actually incredibly important to me and to the developers. Like when we first started doing this, like even within the first couple shows, we just used to send out an email afterwards and be like, hey, why did you apply to the Megabooth? And like more than half of the people were like, I wanted to join a community and I wanted to have other developers to talk to and I wanted to meet more people. And so for a lot of indie developers, there's like pockets and local scenes. And so people will meet up with each other maybe like once a month or once every couple months, because it can be very lonely and really isolating to work on a really small team and to work on passion projects and to work in small budgets. And you get really heads down and you kind of get in this bubble. And then you would go out and talk to another person and they would have a similar experience. And having that camaraderie, even if you're only having it every once in a while, is incredibly important. And having the emotional support, I guess, that goes around like kind of going through the process of making a game. Because in some ways it's like, you know, you think of like maybe movies is kind of the closest thing, but like music or art, you know, you can kind of work on something like fairly quickly and be done with it or throw it out quickly. But like some games, I mean, there are some people who show their games in the first Megabooth and the game is still not out. You know, it's like 7-8 years. And like that is not totally uncommon. And so you're doing it for years and years and years. And so these local communities then, now what we've done is we've created a kind of global community. Hmm. And sometimes we'll curate for games where somebody like will send a game in and it's from like some country I didn't even know anybody was making video games, or like a place like Kentucky, you know, which is not so exotic, but I was just like, oh, wow.
Is that a country?
Yeah, the country of Kentucky.
We just lost our whole Kentucky crew yeah, right now.
Kentucky,
like, what are you talking about?
Indonesia.
Kill, stuff.
Yeah. And so in situations like that, we'll invite them as long as the game is hitting some quality level, because we want them to meet other people within the community so that they can learn those lessons and take it back to their local community and grow the scene there. So we curate very heavily for that. Like we curate for game, company, and presentation, and the company part is really important. And we also really like when people are bringing a part of themselves creatively to it, or they're bringing a story, or they're discussing something about their culture or a community, or just something different, right? Like you can buy any of the same stories over and over and over again anywhere. And like we started to get this, I'd say probably within the last few years. And we also work with, like we had a fund through Intel, we work with Oculus and Epic and stuff as well to help fund teams to come to PAX, like shows like PAX, to be able to show their games. And so I think for GDC, actually, we might have given you some money from like the Intel stuff at some point to like help to cover the booth spaces or something. Yeah.
Some small things, but yeah. Like in a really tight spot at first.
Yeah. But it's like, because it's expensive and difficult for teams like that to get out there, and so we try to work with bigger companies and we try to come up with ways and initiatives to like help to support, help to support these teams. And so we started seeing more stuff coming. Like we had a game that was made by an African development team that was based on African culture. We had one from a team from India that was based on like Indian mythology and just like and stuff like that. Because it's like I play a game like that for a few minutes and I'm like, oh yay, like something new, you know, like a new world and like new stories and new things. And so for me, that's personally exciting. And because I'm the boss and I get to choose what we do with it, like I'll put games like that in there. And so over the years, then that shows when other developers then see that that's possible, or that something like that can get selected, or like in the IGF when something like one of Christine Love's games, Lady Killer in a Bind, had won for narrative the year before. You know, like something like that is really important, because there are people that don't submit their games to IGF or people that don't submit their games to the Megabooth because they might not think that they can get selected or that it's not for them. And so the more that you're modeling what you're looking for, even if initially that's really small, once people see that and there's that model there, then they'll be like, oh, that could be me, and like I want to make something like that, or I am making something like that. And then that becomes more possible, and we start to see more stories and more games that are like that.
Yeah, awesome. Ika, Falcon Age looks super dope, and I'm really excited for it. I'm even more excited because I know that you've thought really, really hard about the cultural touchstones that are coming along with that game. I kind of want to give you a chance to kind of share a little bit about, you know, why that's important for you and why you decided to implement that stuff within Falcon Age.
Sure. I was born in Sri Lanka, but I grew up in Maryland. Another country.
The country of Maryland.
I moved here when I was about eight, and for a long time. I mean, this happens with all immigrant kids and probably every other kid too, but like like you try to fit in as best you can, right? Especially high school's the worst, but like growing up, you know, I was trying to just fit in as much as I can culturally, and that means like, you know, not like trying to fit in with everybody else does, and I did that for a long time, and I started in games at 19. Is this on?
Okay. Yeah.
I worked on teams that, you know, a lot of the games being made then, there's more variety now, but it wasn't a whole lot of variety. So I worked on big teams and smaller teams, and I knew when I started a company, I wanted to do, you know, have more characters that looked like me, or, you know, that were more representative. And for Falcon Age, the other games we're going to be doing Outer Loop, the main character is of, you know, South Asian descent, and the world is kind of more representative of something a little different. And, you know, things like Black Panther and like The Big Sick and Get Out, you're trying to see more typically, you know, side characters in movies and films and TV, now having fleshed out depth main characters, and I really appreciate that, and stuff like Assassin's Creed Origin, you know, a big studio doing characters that are normally side characters and doing a whole story around that. So I think we're starting to see a shift of more diversity in games and things, and not just the characters that look different, but the stories are a little different too. And I've been really inspired. It took, Julian, you took 10 months to start a studio. I took way too long. It took 21 years for me. And just to touch on community a little bit, only reason I was able to do that was like talking to people like Kelly and my other friends that run studios. And it's scary. Like,
that's
trying
very
to,
scary.
Yeah, jump into it. So like having that community and having, you know, time to people to talk to and say, Is this smart? Am I doing this right? Who knows? Like, making games or making anything is a very vulnerable process. So it's like, I'm like coming to PAX. It's like I'm still like definitely afraid of people like touching the game. And I know it's gonna break. And it's like, but like, you know, people come by and they see it, they love it, and so like it feels really good. And PAX is one of my favorite shows for that. It's just like there's other industry events like E3, which is people are there because they're paid to be there. But PAX, you know, you care about the games. You want to meet people and. Indie Mega Booth's been awesome to be part of. But yeah, again, I'm really excited that there's more opportunities for people and different types of stories, and I mean, that's the kind of things we're building. The Falcon Age is, it's a main character, it's a young woman of South Asian descent, and she learns to become a falcon hunter, and we have like an older auntie character, which you never really see. I have really mean auntie, so I was like, I want to kind of get some of that in there, and
thank you for sharing, Ika.
Yeah. So, don't tell them that. Like, it's not regretted, but, like, just culturally a little different than what you know, like the stuff that I for a long time I tried to like kind of hide, and now I'm more comfortable with, you know, kind of I think sharing some of that with everybody else. And anyway, so I'm super excited to still be making games.
Abby, one of the things I love about Media Molecule is it does feel like, even from the outside, it feels like this fantastic melting pot of different kinds of folks helping to make some of the best games on the planet. That was me fanboying, shut up.
I'm fine with it. I'll allow it.
What's that look like from the, what's that look like from the kind of the comm side of things, where we do see, at least here in the States, there's a huge kind of push for more diverse voices and people kind of being pushed out to the front in terms of, you know, we want to see more people of color, we want to see more women out there, more non-binary folks and LGBTQ folks. What's it been like from the Media Molecule standpoint in terms of being able to showcase some folks from the team when, you know, we live in an age where, you know, folks don't want to be out front? What's been the kind of ways you've kind of been able to kind of pull people's personalities out front and kind of add some little cultural bits to the stuff that you've already been doing?
Yeah, I mean, I touched on a little bit about that before, is like identifying like a smaller thing that someone is comfortable with, yeah. You know, sharing or doing. But the really nice thing about Dreams too is, and I think really actually the nice thing, the thing that we've all been touching on with games is that like there's ways to bring out and to reflect those elements of the team in our games. Like, we wouldn't make the kind of games that we do without the kind of team that we have. And I think we have 28 different cultures represented across the studio. Mm. And I want to say like 38% women.
That's awesome.
And
that's
I mean, great. We're about 65 yeah. people. We're a pretty small studio, but it's really important for us to have, you know, an incredibly diverse team. And you know, not only is that like a conscious, you know, choice that you make when you're choosing which characters you have in your game, like what you represent to the outside world, but it's also about, you know, to Kelly's point, about being visible. And you know, we do a lot of outreach to schools. We do a lot of you know, we do a lot of public facing stuff so that we do have people who are representative, you know, like of our company, so that we can bring in like more diversity. We can make more creative games. The cool thing about Dreams is that you can make anything. Mm. And so, you know, what's been really interesting is to watch people who don't generally contribute to maybe the main storyline that we do in a game, like make smaller experiences, make other things. Like, it's like peeking inside like the heads of your coworkers, not in like a really gross, weird way. But it's fascinating, and I think that's, you know, what we're the most excited to see about the community is to see all these, like, you don't have to make like a huge AAA game, you can just make a small experience, you can make a piece of music, you can make, you know, something small. We've given people like basically free reign to do anything, so we want to see like that kind of diversity reflected in our community, in what we create. But it's tough too. Like, you can't force people to be spokespeople for your company.
Yeah.
And so like I said, like we try to find like smaller bits of things. And the nice thing about Dreams, we've been able to pull out like a music piece or a level that someone has made and showcase that and just talk about them rather than making them have to go out in front of a camera, which is terrifying to most people. I've been really comfortable with it for a really long time, and I don't remember until I'm trying to coax people out to do interviews and that kind of stuff that, like, it's utterly terrifying for most people. Yeah. But yeah, it's been a really fun experience on Dreams, because I've never been able to work on a project and see that many people reflected directly in it, which is awesome.
That's awesome. Kelly, I want to jump ahead a little bit. What's one of the biggest obstacles that you see coming across in the indie space? Like, we've talked about tools getting better, we've talked about kind of representation being a part of the equation, but we still see that we have a really saturated market with a lot of cool stuff in it, trying to get some exposure. Besides all those things, what's the other obstacle that you feel like Indie Mega Booth is kind of tackling by doing the work that they do so that folks can kind of get themselves out there?
I touched on this a little bit, but I think the community part is super important. And I guess maybe a little bit to Abby's part and like that question about like representation and stuff as well is like modeling what we want to see happening. Yeah. And I think now that we've been doing this long enough and I'm starting to see people come through with like, oh, it's their second game, or younger developers that were inspired by stuff that they've seen in the Mega Booth before, and realizing the power of the community that we've had and like the impact that we've been able to have on indie games in general and on like what people view, that sort of stuff. Like, there's a couple years ago for PAX, like there's some controversy, which I shall not be named, I guess. And we had a lot of people that really, really wanted us to leave PAX. Like, and I had a lot of angry people in my community locally, and I lived in Boston, and that's where we started off at. And I talked to a lot of people about it, because like, I boycott a bunch of stuff. Like, I don't eat Domino's pizza, and I know it's not affecting anything, but I do it because I ethically feel like it's something that I want to boycott. And I had a really interesting conversation with a friend that was like, you know, if you really want to affect change, if you're the majority of the people participating in something, you boycott. If you're the minority, it's counterintuitive, but you actually sit in. And that's why, like, if you use the civil rights as a comparison, like, the bus boycotts work, because you know, everybody's riding the bus, and then we're like, well, we're not going to, and so now you're not going to make any money. But then you, like, sit in on diners because you're not allowed there, and so you're increasing your presence and your visibility. And so we decided to sit in, basically, and to stay and to make it better and to make it what we wanted to see. And, like, and now I see that, and I'm not saying that, like, we're the only people that did it. Like, you know, PAX, like, you know, made a lot of changes, and there were a lot of conversations around that. But, like, I'm really glad that we made that decision and that we stuck through to create the community and create the change and create the positivity that we want to see. And, like, and I really think that indie games is pushing a lot of the, like, fringe conversations forward in the larger community of, like, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, like, how do we increase representation, how do we do this stuff, and it's kind of like a breeding ground for all of those things. And so being a part of, like, an ability to create, like, an incubation space for that kind of stuff and a safe space and a community for people to support each other and to, like, to give positive feedback for positive stuff, because I think there's so much negativity and there's a lot of attention on people that are, like, negative and, like, how shitty things are and just, like, and it's super overwhelming. And, like, but if you focus on, like, what we all want the future to be and you do the slow and steady thing and you support the people and you reward them for having that kind of behavior or reward them for, like, those things happening, you know, I'm seeing it. Like, it's 7-8 years in and, like, it's nice. Like, we have a nice welcoming community and, like, we don't tolerate, like, even if the game is super cool and the team is awful, like, we just don't work with them and we don't put the game in the space and, like... that's my choice. Like, I don't have to do that, right? Like, in a kind of very blunt way, like, when I was first starting, I was like, I don't want to work with assholes. And, like, and I just don't. I don't want to reward the behavior, like, no matter what we get out of it. And sticking to that principle has been, like, difficult, but I think it's important. And, like, you know, like I said, like, creating that space where other people can feel safe, like, taking, like, being, welcomed into something like that and feeling like it's okay, I think has been really, really important to me.
Dope. And I'm happy you said that about the negative stuff that we see in the industry that happens often. So we're going to pivot to things that are not negative. So I want to talk about, and this is for everyone on the panel, when you are in those hard spaces during your job, when you're doing everything that you have to do to make sure things are moving forward and kind of pushing, what is the thing that you lean on, or what is the thing that you like the most about your job that pulls you through, and you can reflect on that to kind of get the thing done? Abby, I'll start with you.
That's so heavy. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of what this job entails that is, like, doing the best with the resources that you have at any given time, and that is true regardless of whether you were working at a small indie company or a AAA one. And that can be incredibly stressful. It can involve a lot of, like, just adaptation and ability to, like, change things on the fly, to be spontaneous, and to think quickly. And it can be really overwhelming. What I've really loved about working at MM is there's a support network of people that, you know, you can be very open and frank with to say, like, look, I'm having a hard day. I really could use help with this. And and having that sort of support network internally. We talked so much about building community externally. And then you sort of took it to the second point where you're like, but we also, as a developer, I need a community. Even within a developer, you need a community and building that sort of internal relationships and having other people around you that you can rely on, or if you're having a bad day that you can talk to. And that sounds like it should be an easy thing, but it's often not, because especially when you're in a position of leadership at a company, you can have days where you're worried about things and you're upset about things, but it's really important not to let that sort of seep out to people around you. So, like, because, like, the same way that we talk about toxic communities, like, that can exist within developers as well, because game development is really hard. And it can be really stressful, and it can bring out the worst in you and everyone around you. And I think sometimes it's really, I think it's, like, really nice to have a person that's outside of your company. You know, like you're saying, like, somebody else at another developer, someone else who's, like, part of Indie Mega Booth, to be able to talk to you about some of the same concerns and problems that you have. So building that sort of support network, building that community is, like, an incredibly important thing to have, because you just don't want to bring that negativity to people around you. Because we all have stressful days, and, you know, big wins and then, like, big downs too.
Ika.
Yeah, it's really easy to get myopic and, like, you're stressing out about a particular problem in your game, and then, you know, you think it's, like, the most important thing, and I go to my kids and they could give a shit about it, right? Like, like, my wife's like, well, you know, I teach kids, and I, you know, had this situation, which is like, I'm just making a game. It's like, but it's really, really, like, you know, she's teaching the youth, which is awesome. Like, it's, and it's really helpful as a team for us, like, going out to lunch together. Like, yeah, we're a small team, and we're all distributed around Seattle, but also in London, all over the place. But just getting together once in a while, that it's not specifically, because we're in the middle of a day, in the middle of production, it's really hard to have, like, a regular conversation, right? Because you're just like, oh, we got this deadline, we got to finish this thing, we got to do this thing, and just going out to lunch and just, you know, go see a movie together or just go out.
I started a softball team.
That's awesome.
Oh, nice.
I coach football.
Nice.
In my spare time.
American or European?
American football. My kids play on.
Ask now.
So, yeah, yeah.
We play football once a week, but the European guy.
Oh, yeah, the kicky.
Which I refuse to call. I'm actually being really good right now. Usually I just call it soccer and I make them all, you know, embrace my culture.
Yeah, you know, or... It's really
I'm a horrible American in the studio, by the way. I've done appalling things to crumpets. I didn't even know that was a thing that you could mess up. And
wait,
like,
you can
no
mess
one
up
spoke
crumpets?
To me for like a week after they saw me make tea. So Americans are terrible.
Yeah, I mean, having a hobby outside or game job is super useful. And just having talking to other people that give you a different perspective has been, again, that's come down to a community, whether it's your family, your friends, or someone that's outside of your very, you know, focus group. It's been super, super, super helpful. Yeah, having hobbies is good.
Yeah, yeah. Something else to do.
Something else.
This might be related to the crunch stuff. If we want to talk about that. But like, I used to work a lot more. I think everybody used to work a lot more.
Yeah, that was a lot easier when we were just like we were talking about the show stuff earlier and how it's like, oh yeah, you know, like I had such stamina at PAX like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
No.
It's not like that anymore.
And no. I feel like I get a lot more done working less these days, too.
Yeah.
Just focus, because you just get tired. Your brain gets tired, and you're just, like, ramming your head against the same problem.
Yeah, and you don't even realize sometimes that you're in that hole. I've had, you know, like sometimes you get to get in those, like, period before, like, a big show or something, where it's like, oh, we need screenshots, and oh, God, we need them today. And then, like, I've had, you know, like, one of our artists, like, and they'll, you know, take it upon themselves and then stay up all night, and they're making this thing, and they just go down that hole. And then you look in the morning, like, why did you vignette everything to the point where you, like, it's sometimes it's better to just step away, come back to it, and, like, you actually get more done by stopping working.
Yeah, or you're trying to solve a design problem or a program problem, and you, like, you stay up all night, and then you just leave.
Yeah.
You get sleep, wake up in the morning, you're like, oh.
And it's hard. It doesn't feel like, you know, you feel like you have to get this done and there's deadlines, but like it's been an amazing lesson how important it is to be able to step away, back away, give your brain a rest. You know, and it sounds counterintuitive when we have deadlines and we have things that need to get done, but it helps.
Well, you can't like
so
brute,
much.
Yeah, you can't brute force your way into a creative solution. Yeah. And like, I've been actually like reading and listening to tons of podcasts and stuff, basically like, you know, the art of procrastination or slowing down. And like, yeah, you really need time to kind of like process and think through those things. And I think there's also a culture, you know, just a general work culture, but especially in tech, where it's like very instantaneous. Like, and I blame Twitter for a lot of this kind of shit, but it's just like, it's instantaneous. Like, okay, this is my reaction. This is my reaction. This is my reaction. It's like, stop reacting. Like, when are you breathing? When are you thinking? When you're sleeping? You know, like your instinctual first thing that comes out of your mouth is probably horrible and like lizard brain and weird. And like, people aren't supposed to like really be doing that sort of stuff, you know? And like, yeah, you really kind of need to like mull it over and step away from stuff. And like, I'm saying this as if I'm super awesome at it. Like, this is a thing that I've just started being able to do. Like, I'm just like starting to get hobbies again and like, yeah, getting regular night sleep and not working like crazy, because my idea is that like, if I'm not in front of my computer or I'm not like, yeah, like brute forcing my way through, that I'm not really working, you know? And some of that comes from like, you know, I grew up in not so great financial situation, I guess. And like most of the people around me and most of the jobs I had before that were more like labor or retail, or you're like physically doing stuff all the time, and switching into a thing where your thinking feels super cushy and like privileged and weird. And so I'm like, well, I have to be miserable at it or else I'm not actually like really working. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make you better. It makes you miserable and it makes your work really bad and it makes your work suffer. Like, you know, the 8-hour workday was something I think like Henry Ford had researched on, like how long can a person physically work before they become so tired that they stop being as productive. And we still work like that in tech. And the thing, like for creative and like intellectual work, I think it's more like 6 hours or maybe 5 or something. Like, mm-hmm. It feels like your brain should just be able to like go and go and go and go forever, because it's not like, I don't know, a muscle or something like that, but it actually does not work that way at all. And so like the idea that that's still kind of like like pushed as like how we're supposed to work, and you have to like sit on the desk, and then you also have to be on Twitter for like 20 hours a day or something, responding to everything that happens, is just like actual insanity, you know?
Yeah. And that's actually a really terrible part of American culture too.
Yeah.
Like really
yeah, the work. Yeah. Talk about siestas. Yeah. Tell us the art of siesta.
I think there's a lot to learn maybe from the Spanish culture. I'm not from there. I'm actually from Argentina, South America. And so I went to Spain when I was 10 or so. And if you go to Spain, I don't know if you have been there, like still lots of shops or stores close from 2 to 4 or to 2 for, to 5 just to eat and even like to sleep a bit. And I think that's the way to go. And that's just me.
Yeah.
And it's to remember that there shouldn't be no deadline that stops you from getting a dinner with friends or just partying or just, you know, like relaxing. Because if you forget that, you're like, I think, kind of missing the point, because it's amazing to work creating things. I'm so grateful for that. But at the same time, what's the point if you are not also like enjoying life for all the other things? So I try to do that myself. I try to always remember as the one managing my team to do that. Sometimes the artist comes and tells me like, my family is visiting, or I have this convention I want to, and I am like, just yeah, go, enjoy that time, and then you come later, and we keep working, because what's the point if you are starting to feel stressed or worrying, like if I will let you do that, like what's the point if you can like just enjoy life. And the other thing I'm really grateful and that helps me like keep working even when I'm in at a bad spot is the community, but meaning like the fandom. In that sense, I think we're kind of lucky that we have a really healthy community. We have like this Discord channel. It's not a lot of people, but I think there's like more than 3,000 people, and it's like really healthy as a community. And so sometimes I'm like stressed or I'm like really tired, but remember there's like so a lot of fans waiting for that. Like these packs, we have seen like between 10 or 15 like cosplayers already, and that makes you want to work more because you have these ideas in your head with your whole team. And when you are like getting tired, you see all these people that's waiting for you to keep creating, and that at least to me it helps a lot to keep creating. You know, it's really grateful as a creator.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like one of the things that we do in the studio is like we have a couple walls that we just dedicate to like fan art and things and letters that our community have sent us, and once a week our community manager compiles like tweets that like people have sent that are just kind words and things and sends them out to the team. And it's amazing what a difference that makes. I think sometimes like people think that like that stuff gets lost in the void, but it really doesn't. It makes a huge difference. Like when people are really stressed and working really hard and there's deadlines. I mean, cause it's lovely to be able to step back and relax from a project, but that's rare. And it makes a huge difference to have like just like every once in a while, like kind word. And then we make sure that we share that with everybody on the team.
That's why I think like shows like this can also be really important for developers, because it kind of reinvigorates them in a way, because they get to interact with the fans and really see the effect of what they're doing and what they're working on. Like we had a developer show like a year or so ago, and she's made a bunch of different games, and people came up and they were just like, you know, really fanning out about like how much they liked her older stuff and how exciting it was to meet her. And she came out of it and she's just like really overwhelmed, and she's like, I was not expecting that to happen, and I wasn't expecting like what an impact it was going to have on me. And basically like that kind of keeps people going till the next one. They come out to it and then they're like, oh my god, what am I doing. And then at the end of it you're like, I get it, I know what I'm doing.
And it's good for people who can't go to like find a way to share that with them, like send messages back, give updates. We set up a Google Hangouts once so like everybody could like basically dial in and see.
Well, that's cool.
Dangerous if you do that with video chat. I shouldn't share this story, but I won't name names. We did have someone dial in to our Google Hangout and didn't realize that it was a video, and he was on the toilet, and then immediately realized, and then like dropped the phone and
into the toilet.
So lessons learned.
You know what? I really feel like this is actually a design flaw with Google Hangouts. You should not have the video on as a default. That is worst thing. Yeah. Every time that I'm doing it, this is the picture that everybody sees is the upside of my nose. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. I've had one of those private dancer moments. And it was not cute. We have about 5 minutes or so before the end of the panel. Time has flown. If you have a question, please queue up in the middle aisle, and then you'll be able to do that. Really quickly, while people are queuing up, I want to go down the line really fast and give folks a chance to shout out something that they are really excited about that's coming up. If you want to plug what you're doing, that's also fine.
That was my question.
What? Oh, to plug things?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine. Go ahead, answer your question.
No, go for it.
All right, Julian, you go first.
Well, I want to shout out other Spanish games that are being done or recently released. They are Billions. I think they don't need a shout out because they're like doing so good. Moonlighter too, but it's I guess it's nice to tell their like Spanish games too. And also recently Kickstarter like Temtem. Well, not that recently, Blasphemous. I'm getting really excited because there's not that many Spanish games that are well known internationally. I would say maybe Gods Will Be Watching is the one Spanish indie game that's the most known. And now there are a lot that are appearing recently. I would say Monster Prom 2 maybe. But it's really nice to see that we are starting to become a really productive community that's starting to be seen like on all the other countries, you know?
Got it. Kelly?
So we actually started doing a thing we implemented. We do shout outs at the beginning of our weekly meetings where everybody on the team can say a nice thing about something that someone else has done on the team or someone that supported them. So I kind of like, I know it's my own thing, but I also kind of want to like, I don't know, the team that we built this year is like, it's been amazing and it's been like, it's changed a lot of like how the Mega Booth runs and works. And I just feel like super, super, super grateful. And like this show in particular has kind of been the final end of me hanging on to a lot of old shit. And so it was nice to like have the team there and be supportive and like just, they've just been awesome. So I wanted to give a shout out for that. And then the other thing I wanted to give a shout out for is Girls Make Games, which is a program that was started by a woman named Layla, who actually had shown in the Mega Booth. She was making educational games and she had come through, and then she started this program that teaches like middle school girls, like elementary, middle school, high school girls, how to code and program, make games. And they've actually submitted games into the Mega Booth and then shown them. And like, and it's really grown, and like they work closely with Xbox. And like, it's just a super, super cool program. And I just think it was really great to see that like come out of the community. So that was my other shout out.
Badass. Ika.
Come check out the Mega Booth. After you do that, go to the sixth floor, and there's some great stuff in the PAX 10 and just around the corner. So there's lots of great, there's tons of stuff up there.
Yeah.
Abby?
Psych gags work really well for podcasts.
We've been
really, really big fans of Untitled Goose Game ever since we saw it at GDC, because we were sat next to them. Very excited about that. But honestly, I mean, like, you're here. I think my thing, I think it's a great chance to talk to developers and people in the industry, and like, don't miss that opportunity, because it's a really fun chance to learn a lot from people. And I've always found that at PAX that people are really accessible and really take the time to like talk to everyone here. It's a really friendly, really great show. So like, don't miss that opportunity. I think it's really special.
We love chatting with fans, so please.
Yeah, go be nice to devs when you see them out in the world, because they really, really appreciate it. Everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Thank you. Give it up to the folks on the panel today as well. Before you go, in the back of the room, there are also some questions right there that people are talking about right there. But on the back of the room, there's some swag before you leave. Really quick, folks who are at the mic, if you want to answer your question or ask your question, I'm sorry.
Sure. So I wanted to touch on exposure really quick. I'm partnered with this guy right over here, and we're making an indie game, and we're going to plan on doing Twitter and website and everything else like that. But how else should we increase our exposure out there? Especially as we're like holding out full-time jobs and just kind of like meeting once a week and doing this at our nights, like how should we approach that?
That is like a long question.
Yeah, I mean, you want to test out your idea in the market, right? So if you have Twitter, like, throw a GIF up there, see how people respond, see what I've been trying to do that more. Like, what does people respond to, right? And then focus on that thing a little more and try to do more of that. And it's every game is very, you know, as you probably know, every game is very different, and some, you know, it might not be the right time for that game, you might not find the right audience for it, but like,
yeah,
especially with social media, just throw something out there and see how people react to it if you can. Yeah.
And it's also like a 10-player game too, so
you
made this easy.
I really made our first game hard on ourselves. So yeah.
I think it's but we live in a really good time in the sense that there's like many ways of create your own milestones. Like, let's see if we can get this many followers on Twitter. Let's see if people do fan art after like sharing the characters. It depends on the game, of course. Mm-hmm. Let's do a Kickstarter, which is not only to gather money also for that, but to test the market.
Sure.
I think it's super important to not marry completely the idea. Like it has to be exactly this, and to check with these milestones of how the people is reacting, and be, you know, like flexible about that. We did that with Monster Prom. We first
be flexible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like we first did like on TixSource devlog, and we were like, let's see if people want to comment about that. Then we were like, okay, it's working. We have like many pages of people discussing monsters and whatnot. Let's do a Twitter. Let's see if we get like followers and that. And finally a Kickstarter. Like you have to build your own milestones. I think that's really important for an indie developer, because probably you are putting a lot like on the game. That's, you know, from your own life, you know. So you need to be sure that you're going the right direction. I think.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your question. Next awesome. And last yeah. question of the show.
The indie development community matures and like gamers' preferences mature, do you think it's still possible to be like a one-man team, or is that like going by the wayside?
Or a yeah. one-woman team? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think depending on the type of games you want to make, you know, I think was the Hold Down that just came out recently that on mobile that I think is a one-person team.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's definitely possible. I would not romanticize it too much.
Yeah. So we talk about wearing a lot of hats. You'll wear all the hats.
Yeah. Yeah.
So along those lines, at what point do you start considering bringing in other people into your team in order to?
When you feel overwhelmed, really, that's a really good yeah. point of seeing.
Yeah, I guess it depends on like how you're funding it. If you're doing it in your you have full time jobs. And if you can marry in your spare time and get it to a point where people are interested, that's the best. Like,
and if you want to fill that question out and fill it out a little bit more after the panel, please do so. The folks may be able to give you some time to be able to do that. Thank you for your question. Again, thank you everyone for coming and hanging out. Julian, Ika, Kelly, and Abby, thank you so much for your time. And thank you everybody for coming out.
Thank you.